Welcome to the New Abbey Podcast. We are still in our Reclaim series. This morning we are talking about Sabbath, and the question for you all is, what do you think about when you think about Sabbath? I feel like I love being in a place that continues to push the story of God bigger, and being a person who, to exist in the story of God, it had to get bigger. That's been like a beautiful gift, but it was like, yeah, took some growing. Just appreciate that. And that's what Jesus kind of continually does. That's what we've been doing in our Reclaiming series. It's kind of taking a look at maybe the way we've been taught, our popular culture, the way that things that they said that these things are, and reclaiming it and saying what's there, what does that mean for us in Los Angeles in 2018. So we'll keep doing that this morning with Sabbath. We're still in Luke. We are in we're in Luke chapter 6 and 1 through 5, and it goes like this. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples began to pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. Some of the Pharisees asked, "Why are you doing this unlawful? Why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" Jesus answered them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the consecrated bread, he ate what was lawful only for priests to eat, and he also gave some to his companions." Then Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." So here we have another story where the Pharisees are the worst. And I was like thinking, I always think this about the Pharisees because they are the worst in every story. But then I'm like, I get it, right? The Pharisees are people who have committed their life to this faith, and in doing that, there's something about us that wants to know, like, if I'm going to do something wholeheartedly, I want to be good at it, right? So, and to be good, there has to be a way to measure if I'm doing it well, right? And so the Spirit, I feel like the Pharisees are like, listen, we're committing our life to this. There has to be, like, there has to be a ranking system, and Jesus keeps saying there's no ranking system, there's no hierarchy, and the Pharisees are like, yeah, but if that's true, then, like, how will I know if I'm being better than someone, right? Which is, like, you know, with anything that there's no, like, we're comfortable with that. We like grades and performance reports, and we want to know, like, we don't just want to be doing a job and being like, maybe it's working, maybe it's not, you know? Like, that's so frustrating. And so the Pharisees are here again. They're confronting Jesus. Jesus and the disciples are walking through grain fields, just grabbing a snack, and this is unlawful. So we have the Pharisees, we have them confronting Jesus again by doing something unlawful on Sabbath. Jesus references the story of David, right? So this story is in, is it 1 Samuel or 2 Samuel? Yeah. It's one of the Samuels, is the original story, right, that has David, the perfect Jew, right? The man after God's own heart, traveling, and the people he's traveling with get hungry, and they go, and the only thing to eat is the bread that's only for the priest by law, right? And so they eat it, the people he's traveling with eat it, and the story goes on. So then we have Jesus end with this line that says, "The Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath." In other words, I'm in charge now, right? Like, I love this. I have an image of, like, that movie where the guy's like, "I'm the captain now," right? And Jesus is saying, the church, right? The church is no longer bound to the law. The church is bound to me. The church is bound to Christ. And now you look to me, right? This, I am the living example of how and what and when. It's no longer this rigid law, but the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath, right? The church is bound to Christ, and in being bound to Christ, we look to Christ to figure these things out. So the Pharisees had this law, they had the Sabbath, they knew their way around all like the ins and outs, like what if this comes up? Turn your oven on at night. Like it became this rigid thing of what's the least amount of things you could do on a day of the week, right? And Jesus comes along and once again blows the whole thing up. But there's something in us that's attracted to the law, right? And the Richard Rohr, who we quote often in here, a theologian, he tells a story of doing ministry with someone, and that person told Richard Rohr, the hardest demon to defeat is the demon of legalism. And Richard Rohr kind of says, like, that's strong language, right? And he says, as he goes on, he talks about this idea that God and the law enjoy the same authority, and there's one way to sort of experience that. We put the law over holiness and everything, and this person was saying that the reason for them calling it a demon is the evil that comes from it. And the evil that comes from legalism, they were saying, is social control. Now this isn't about union with God, union with the divine, union with your community. Now this is about social control. And that's where legalism, the evil of legalism, comes out. So you have histories, right? The Pharisees want this social control. They want people to act the way they want to act. And then no Christian ever used religion for social control again. And that was the last time you saw it. which is great. Yeah. Cough, cough. Presidential elections. And so you have this idea, this evil coming that's like, well, if we can get people to understand that the law is superior, the law is God, God and the law enjoy the same authority, now we can control what they do. And the Pharisees were very interested in that because that comes with power, that comes with all kinds of things. And so then Jesus quotes David, the story of David. This is a story that the Pharisees would know because David is, again, the perfect Jew who everyone loves, a man after God's own heart. And he quotes David saying, you realize that the stories you use, there are holes in your theory. There are some holes in your theology. This doesn't all hold up. I'm going to show you a story of someone that you love and love to quote. The moment David realized human need trumps the law, or Obama's the law, right? Whatever way you want to look at it. But human need comes above the law. And even David, your perfect David, realized that, but you choose to tell the story in a way that doesn't accept that, right? It reminds me of this strange phenomenon. We have this strange thing that happens in our world. It happens every January. Every January, if you pay attention, you'll see lots of white evangelical church leaders posting MLK quotes on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is fascinating. It's like the Pharisees referencing David. Because I mean, you are choosing to use the story of a man who literally stood up against and realized that what you're doing is not right, but you will take a pieces of what he said because you're into the social control. It's not cool to not like MLK. So you'll take the I have a dream, but you'll leave the critique of capitalism and racism and American evangelicalism, right? And so you have these pastors who are always quoting MLK, and I'm like, what? You know, you're like, have you read the stories? Have you read the speeches? Have you heard anything else he said besides I have a dream? Because if you had, you know that there's a bigger story here that will call for some critique. So you have Jesus kind of putting the same light to the Pharisees of like, have you even read the stories? Have you even read the things you're talking about? This law that you've created, does this sound familiar at all to some churches we might have experienced? Have you read the thing? Have you read the gospel? Has it sunk in? Or are you choosing the pieces that make it easier to create the world that you're comfortable with, right? I have a dream is a great speech. What's less appealing is when Martin Luther King Jr. calls for us to not buy certain products because they contribute to capitalism that is forcing a bigger system that's keeping these people down, right? We don't want that. We don't want the radical pieces. We'll take it, right? We'll take Muhammad Ali, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, but not his critique on racism and the war. And we're allowed to pick and choose. And this has been happening since the Pharisees and David. And so I love that Jesus just quickly is like, well, what about this time? What about this person that you love and quote and when they did this? if you really believe in this thing, you will come to a moment where you realize that human need always supersedes the law. And now I am the Lord of the Sabbath, which means the church is bound to me. And what I'm saying is there's a new kingdom and a new way of life and a new reality in which it's really hard to have social control when there's no hierarchy. There's no grading system. There's no veils that you need to get behind. There's no rooms in the temple that only certain people can go through, right? Like we say all the time, the whole thing's a temple. And that's really frustrating for someone in power. And so we have this whole giant critique, and this is what happens in my head, is there's so much dismantling that needs to get done, but then sometimes the actual thing that we were meant to have gets lost. Right? Sabbath is meant to be a gift. Sabbath is something beautiful that we can experience, that will shape us, that we can encounter. But it got wrapped up as a part of the social control of how much can you not do on a Sunday, and who benefits from that, and how do you do that, and now we get to critique that, and we lost the actual gift of the Sabbath that got caught up in the law. And as a part of our Reclaim series, it's been good for me as a person to not only have the conversation that I just had with you all of, okay, historically, what does this mean for the Pharisees? And they're just about social control, and it's just like slavery and elections and all these things, and I could do that for days, and I do, and I will, and if you want to get coffee, we can do that more. But it has to get to a point where I say, but what does that mean for me as a person who claims to follow Christ in Los Angeles in 2018, knowing that Sabbath is important? And if Sabbath isn't just how many things can you not do on a Sunday, what does it mean, right? What's it for? Stephanie used this amazing example in one of her meditations a few weeks ago of a jar of mud and water. And if you let it sit, they separate and it clears. And life is like doing this. And there has to be a moment where we stop, right? There has to be some place in our life to pause and rest. And if we live in Los Angeles in 2018, you know that life is so freaking loud, right? The other day I was driving, and I drive a Jeep. This is like the least aerodynamic car ever made. It's a square that I just forced to like cut through wind. And it has like plastic windows and a canvas top. So like everything, as soon as you hit 50 miles an hour, everything is shaking and making noise. It's just a loud, slow car that I love. And so I get in my car, and I turn on the Black Panther soundtrack, and I'm like, okay, and I turn it up because I like it. And then I get on the freeway, and my plastic windows start shaking on the metal bars. And I'm like, okay, that's loud, so then I turn it up some more. And then my favorite song came on, so then, you know, another notch. And it doesn't feel strange, right? I'm just driving until I come up to the exit and I go to get off the freeway and I stop. And I was like, oh my God, it was so loud. Like the moment I stopped, I was like, how was I doing that, right? And that's life, right? Sabbath is that moment we're called to just recognize, have a moment that you can stop and recognize how loud things just got. Because if you don't, you will only let them get louder. If that had been another hour in the car, I would have blown out my speakers, which one of them kind of is. Because I like my music loud, and that's fine, right? This isn't to say let's all be monks, but how do we have a moment where we allow ourselves to stop and say, how loud has my life got that I haven't even noticed, right? I've been functioning in chaos, and it's become so comfortable. I haven't stopped to allow things to settle, to turn down the volume, and to ask some questions. And that's Sabbath, right? Oh, and it's so much more interesting than how many things can you not do on a Sunday, to ask the question of, in Los Angeles in 2018, do I have any moments in my life where I can realize how loud the thing just got and turn it down? And for a lot of us, maybe the answer is no, right? I was reading about Sabbath, and this one woman was writing about, we all have like addictive behaviors. We just are, we're humans who want that. And we need moments, this is how she phrased it, to take our pacifiers out, which made me laugh because I was like, what a weird analogy, until I started thinking about it, and I was like, oh, that's all I do all day. All day, all I do is pacify myself, like, with whatever. Music, Queer Eye for the third time on Netflix, because it's the best thing that ever happened to TV. You've watched it, right, Corey? You've seen this season? Yeah. And there's something about, like we were talking about earlier, there's something about humanity that craves this order and this ranking and these things. But there's also something deep about our soul that craves Sabbath. It wants it. And you know it wants it because sometimes it just happens. Last week, it happened to my wife. She loves coffee, like most adult humans. And we have like a Keurig. I'll just say it fast. Keurig. And literally she just like wakes up one day. She's like doing the thing and she's like, I hate this. Like, and I'm like, what? That machine that, you know, you have coffee from? She's like, awakening of like her soul was screaming. She was like, I hate this. I hate how many like pods I use and what that's doing on the environment. I hate how easy it is. I hate that you can't smell it. I hate that I'm not like grinding the beans. Like, and just like leaves, goes to the store and gets like a kettle, a little like this kind of thing. Yeah. Clap for my wife's love of coffee. And a reusable filter. She's like, I'm gonna use less trash. I am making my own coffee. And she just kept saying, like, I want time in the morning. Like, I want a slow morning. I want to wait for this coffee. And I was like, yeah, that's your soul just screaming, we need a Sabbath. Find some way to slow down, right? It's happening in all of our lives. We just have to be willing to turn the music down long enough to hear our soul screaming for that Sabbath, right? And her soul is saying, listen, you already make coffee in the morning. What if it was just a little bit longer and a little bit more thoughtful, right? There's this idea that I love about Sabbath and soul care, that it shouldn't be prescriptive, it should be descriptive, right? So when it becomes prescriptive is when we all, like, I do this all the time, I feel bad about myself. I'm like, okay, I need to start reading. I need to start journaling. I need to get a new devotional. I need to, like, find an extra 30 minutes in my life that I don't have now and, like, add all these things. But then there's an idea of soul care that's descriptive, that asks the question, what things do you already do in your life that you can reclaim as Sabbath? Sammy was already going to drink coffee in the morning. She just reclaimed that as soul care, as Sabbath. Well, how do I make my coffee just a little bit longer? And maybe that's when I ask myself some questions about how I'm doing, right? I did this soul care retreat in grad school, and my grad school life was like wild. And I just remember thinking, like, I don't even have any rituals, you know? So dramatic. And then my friend was like, well, is there anything you do every day? And I was like, not besides shower. And then she was like, well, how can you reclaim that time? And ever since then, showers are my most spiritual experience. Because I just decided to get in there and ask myself the question, how's your soul? Right? If I'm already going to do something for, you know, 10 to 30 minutes, depending on my mood, and how dramatic my day felt, if I'm already going to be doing that, how can I just reclaim it for Sabbath? Our lives are so full. We're not trying to add anything. We're trying to look at our life and say, what's already there that can be reclaimed for some Sabbath time, right? And this is where it gets super practical for me of literally looking at our lives and saying, what do we already do? And can we create a moment for some Sabbath and some soul care? Because soul care is very different than self-care. And that's important to know. My self-care is going to the movies by myself, which is awesome, and I love it. But I'm not asking myself any real questions. I'm taking a break from my life, which is fine. But I'm not in there watching, you know, Black Panther for the fourth time, just being like, how is my soul, you know? I'm like, this is great. My phone's off. I'm eating popcorn. I'm drinking Sprite, you know? And self-care is really important, but it's not soul care. Soul care are moments that allow for depth, for growth. Soul care are the moments, if we think of ourselves as sort of this garden, these are the moments that get ready for the bloom of Easter, right? We have to have moments we are willing to settle and see what's really there and see what needs to be taken away. What do we have too much of? What do we not have enough of? Our souls are already screaming for it, right? And if you're like me, sometimes my soul screaming for soul care is like when I hear a noise in my car. So I just like turn the volume up to avoid it because I'm like, is it gonna cost money? You know, like what's gonna happen, right? We have these like moments, right, where our souls, all of us, we do this. Like we're craving something, but we're scared it's gonna be hard. So then we like watch a show, you know? Or like we get home and maybe it's like quiet and a thought pops up that we don't wanna go there. So then we like call a friend to get a drink, right? We do this all the time. But if we want the Sunday, right? We want this resurrection, we want these blooms, we want this new life. Like we live in a world literally where we want everything is available, right? Like you can get a tomato year round. That's super weird for most of history. That at any time you can just walk into a building and they will give you a tomato and you have no idea where it came from. And I don't even know what season is tomato season. Because every season is tomato season if I want one. You know what I mean? And so living in that kind of world, we're disconnected with the reality that like we have to do work to get results, right? We can't just have things. And new life and resurrection and spiritual growth is no different. And our souls are calling for this Sabbath, these moments where we actually ask some of those questions that we keep ignoring with volume, right? But we have to do that if we want this reclamation, this new thing, right? And every millennial everywhere side, right? Because we want the thing without having to do the stuff, right? There's this like, this is such a poor tangent that I already started, but and I can't remember the comedian, but it made me laugh so hard. And they were talking about how like in like 2018, people will do anything to lose weight besides diet and exercise, you know? It's like, I lay in a salt, like I get packed with salt, and then I go into like a freezer, and then I wrap myself in, and I'm like, that can't be like, you know what I mean? That can't make more than just like cutting down on the carbs and going for a jog, right? But if there's any quicker way to do it, we'll do it. And recognizing that that's the culture we live in, it's even more important, right? That's the whole thing of like, we're not asking the same questions that Paul asked. We're asking questions of what does Sabbath look like in LA in 2018? And it might look like 10 minutes because that's how wild our minds have gotten. And that might be the most we can handle, right? Sabbath might look like when you get in your car to drive to work, you don't turn the music on for 10 minutes. Boom, right? This is attainable. It's practical. It should make sense for your life. It should be livable and believable. And so this morning, you know, we've been pairing sort of these exercises, but this morning I just wanted it to be super practical, right? Because that's what I'm feeling, what I'm wanting, like this, all of the renewed sort of spiritual experiences and things that I want in life, I'm realizing are just going to come from actually having space to ask myself those questions about how my soul is doing and what it's screaming at me for. So we're just going to take a few minutes and truly think about the rituals that already exist in our day. This is descriptive. It's not prescriptive. What do you already do in a day? And is there any moment that you can reclaim as Sabbath? And literally, like, just look through your phone, think about your week, and see, is there 5 minutes where I can ask myself how my soul is actually doing and be ready for an honest answer? Is it the shower? Is it making coffee? Is it a drive? Is it anything? So we're just going to do that, and we're going to have some self-accountability. So we're going to take that with us. We're going to get back into our groups. We're going to have some conversation. There's two questions available for you. Also, you can talk about neither of these and just anything that was interesting. But what in your life is the loudest right now? Or what is the one practice you want to reclaim as Sabbath this week?
Thanks for listening to the New Abbey podcast. For more information, visit us on the web at www.newabbey.org.